Welcome to the 7th episode in the Lessons from Award-winning Publisher podcast series from Media Voices. I'm Peter Houston, and in this series I'm learning about making successful podcasts from the winners of the Publisher Podcast Awards 2020. Before we get started, we are now accepting entries for this year's awards. Go to publisherpodcastawards.com for more information about entering your podcast. This episode, I'm speaking to Benjamin Thompson, host of the Nature podcast from Springer Nature, the winner of our 2020 Science and Medical podcast category. You might remember me talking to Dave Musgrove, who started the History Extra podcast back in 2007. Well, the Nature podcast just eases it out as our longest running winner. Nature's weekly science news podcast lists well over 600 episodes. And I started my chat with host Benjamin Thompson by asking him when it started and if he knew what the plan had been.
2005, I think, is when we started. Podcasts really were, you know, a new innovation at the time. I think we're at episode 621, I think, of the main show. That's the main weekly show. And I've been working for Nature now for, I guess, 3 years, give or take, I suppose. So I obviously wasn't part of that. I was still at university, I think, when it was decided. But you know, it was from having sort of spoken to the people who were there at the time and who obviously developed it, they thought this kind of the newfangled medium would be a really great way to talk about science and tell some of the stories about the scientists themselves, you know, right? Not just necessarily the research, but how they went about doing it and how they felt about it and those sorts of things. And I think, I mean, fast forward to where we are now. I mean, obviously, I'm sure you've heard the phrase Golden Age of podcast so many times now, you know, it makes your head want to spin. But I think we really are. And say, we've been going for so long now and honing this product that I think it's a bit of an institution, I think, in the sort of science podcast world.
15 years is a long time in science, never mind media. How does the 2020 version of the Nature podcast compare to the podcast that launched in 2005?
I mean, science continues to run apace, right? And I think science has changed somewhat. I think teams are getting bigger and things are getting more expansive. But I think we've really stuck to that kind of core principle of telling people's stories, and I think that's something that's super interesting as well. We've kept going with that, so I think the main show, the spine of the show, has been massaged somewhat and has been improved and honed, but it is broadly comparable in many ways to that sort of original show all those years ago.
The Nature podcast has some longevity, but nothing compared to the Nature Journal, which was first published in 1869. I wondered if it was a daunting task to try to match the journal's reputation for science journalism in the podcast.
We're very lucky. The weekly Nature Journal, I mean, has some of the biggest stories in science each week. We're never lacking for straight research content to talk about. But we're very lucky at Nature. We have a team of amazing journalists and reporters and editors, and we have comment articles and what we call worldviews by people around the world. So it's not just straight science papers that we have access to. We have access to this kind of a font of knowledge and of information as well. So we also cover a lot of stories around that sort of thing as well. So I guess it is a jumping off point in some senses, but the Nature magazine as a whole, with its front half content, we call it, which is the journalism content, and the back half content, which is the straight research. We're so lucky that we have both of them.
In planning and producing the podcast for a specialist audience like scientists, I asked Ben if it was difficult to set the tone and language of the show.
Our core audience, and I think that's obviously something that all podcasters, I think, should be considering when they're sort of striking out. But our core audience are research scientists or people who work kind of in the scientific sphere. And we know that because we asked them, right? What do you do for a living? And I think most people would say they work in academia or in science institutions. So we definitely pitched the show towards them. But what I would say is it's such a broad, science is so amazingly broad. You know, you could be an astrophysicist or a zoologist, right? So although scientists are at our core, we have to obviously be a little bit careful when we're introducing words and subjects and complicated things to make sure that as many people get something out of it as we can. And of course, you know, I hope that non-scientists will get things out of it as well. But I would say that we are a science show for scientists. We never shy away from using technical language where appropriate, but I think you need to be careful to introduce it in such a way that you don't just drop it in, because, you know, I don't know what a lot of these words mean, right? So I imagine that if you work as a biologist and, you know, you throw in some physics terms, you need to be very careful with how you introduce those to people so you can get that thread and tell that story about, you know, what was the question that was asked, how did you go about, you know, figuring out the answer, and what does this mean, sort of thing. So I don't think we're scared of technicalities or of technical language, but yeah, we're quite cognizant that different people understand different words in different ways, right?
Thinking about that specialist scientific audience, I asked Ben if the podcast team got involved in efforts to promote subscriptions or to grow podcast listener numbers.
We are science reporters and journalists, and that's not our core function. I would say that that we are part of a broader company, and so I think that obviously, you know, we do work in that sense. But I would say our job isn't necessarily to drive that sort of thing. It is to report on the weekly science news. Being British, it's very difficult to say I think we do something good. But I'm gonna say, you know, I think we you know, at 600 and change episodes, I think we are confident that we are doing a good thing. But yeah, it is a science news show, you know, and I'm very confident that we do that well, you know. The majority of our growth has been organic, and it has been just telling really, really interesting stories, doing solid science journalism and getting it out there. And of course, it's snowballed. But again, we have the advantage of, you know, 15 years of doing this. And so the numbers have grown. And we know that people have been listening since episode one, are still with us now, sort of thing. When we did a listener survey a while back, we asked people how they'd heard about the show. And a lot of them said, I've been with you, you know, for years and years and years and years and years. So we know that we have that longevity of listeners. And that's amazing, right? And we thank them for sticking with us. In terms of growing it, I mean, it's a difficult time now for a lot of podcasters because there's so many more out there. It's something that we're obviously trying to do and thinking about, but I think making the graph go up is not necessarily our most important thing, right? Telling quality stories and saying doing quality journalism is the most important thing.
Quality stories are at the heart of a successful podcast, but so is quality audio. And I asked Ben what Nature's recording setup looked like.
I mean, where we are now, where I am now is sitting under a duvet with a microphone attached to a coat hanger. But putting that to one side, if we talk about the old normal, maybe rather than the new normal, we have access to a studio with, you know, four microphones set up and a separate sort of production room. So, and we can record phone calls from there. So we're quite lucky in that aspect that we can get a good sound pretty consistently, right? Like, we know that we have sort of broadcast quality microphones and what have you. So for in situ stuff, no problems at all. Obviously, a lot of our interviews are done over the phone, and I think that can introduce technical issues. But you know, I mean, like most of the people you've spoken to, I'm sure we try and get our interviewees to record themselves on a smartphone and send us that. The good thing is about voice memo on an iPhone or about whatever voice recorder you have on an Android is they are pretty easy to set up. And I think I certainly have the spiel of how to find it and how to set it up and what have you. I mean, I'm not going to go through them now, but I actually do have, like, I mean, I can probably do it from memory, my sort of general, like, please put your phone into airplane mode, blah, 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 and so forth. I think, because one thing we'd learned very, very quickly is if you get a text message, I think voice memo on an iPhone just stops recording. So we learned that the hard way, right? But yeah, I think we often do that. But say if we can get a good quality landline, that's usually more than good enough for what we're trying to do.
As Benjamin mentioned, coronavirus changed everything, and I wondered how the Nature team had handled remote recording at the height of the lockdown.
I'm blessed to have such amazing colleagues, because literally we knew that we were going to be having to work from home. And so we said, you know, a bit like Apollo 13, we've got this bag of leads, we've got this bag of recorders, how can we get a good sound out of it? And actually we did some videos and some photographs of each of our setups. And you know, I'm sitting here underneath the washing line. One of our colleagues took his sofa apart and sort of moved the cushions around. I think another one of our colleagues, she lives with an engineer, And they actually repositioned the sofa into this amazing kind of vocal booth. So we've managed to get the show put together there. Obviously, it changes the dynamic slightly. Recording in the same room and playing off someone is very, very difficult to doing it over a conference line or what have you. But we've managed to record four shows already, actually. I think two of the main show, one documentary about the coronavirus, and we launched a new show. The best time to launch a new show is obviously when you're all at home trying to deal with technical woes. But we managed to cut together the first show and get it live across, I think, seven time zones we managed to do it. So I don't know. It is obviously a difficult time, but I think you make use of what you have, and I think I'm really pleased with how it's been working so far, and our listeners as well. I think appreciate the efforts we've gone to, and you know, maybe have given us that little bit of leeway. Obviously, it doesn't sound like when we're in the studio, but I think everyone can understand the situation that the world finds itself in right now.
Leeway from listeners is nice, but is there a line you shouldn't cross with audio quality?
If something is genuinely unpleasant to listen to, I will probably go somewhere else, to be honest with you. I think, you know, so there is that to think about. And again, we're very lucky that we work really, really hard. And I think we've all been developing our home studios to make sure that we make something that does sound pretty, pretty good. But I think it is, that there is, of course, a minimum barrier to entry. It's something that needs to be considered. There are so many podcasts out there. If something sounds unpleasant to listen to, or, you know, or what have you, then people will go elsewhere and find that content somewhere else. So I think, yeah, you need to make sure that you have a half-decent setup before you start, I think.
Putting the implications for podcast recording to one side, the coronavirus crisis has had a huge impact on the job that Nature, as a weekly science news podcast, was trying to do. The team reacted quickly, launching CoronaPod, a dedicated podcast discussing the latest COVID-19 developments every week from March through July. When I spoke to Benjamin, they had just launched CoronaPod, and at that stage, he didn't really know how long it would last.
We have launched this new show, CoronaPod, and that's going to be a weekly show going out on Fridays. And there's going to be a lot of talk, obviously, about the science of what's going on. We're going to use our pool of reporters and their expert knowledge. But we also want to talk to scientists who are researching the virus and you know, trying to fight the outbreak. But also we want to talk to people who may be affected by it as well, you know. So the story's about scientists who maybe can't go on with their research as it stands, but have changed up and, you know, and have changed their discipline sort of overnight to try and work on this problem. I think there's a lot of amazing stories out there to tell about it. We'll, of course, keep doing the regular show as well. So that's going to go out on Wednesdays. So I think that's where we're going to be for the foreseeable, I think. And I mean, come back to me in a couple of months, I think, once we know quite what normal is now and where we tend to go. I think we've got some ideas, but again, they were ideas that were on the table 3 weeks ago, and now everything's changed completely, you know?
I asked Benjamin that as a leading science news podcast that Nature had to launch a coronavirus podcast.
I think my answer to that would be yes. So we had obviously been covering the coronavirus outbreak as it increased and, you know, as things changed. We really started looking at it in January, and it was in the regular Nature podcast, in the weekly show. And I think it got to the stage, there's so much news coming out, and it is such a, I mean, it's one of the events of our time, right? I mean, that we realized that we had to really concentrate on this fully and give this a lot more bandwidth. And I think we've actually managed to, well, we're trying to keep the regular Nature podcast as a corona-free show as well, I think. So if people need to think about something else for a bit, you know, there's still a lot of science going on, right? So they can still get that regular sort of hit of science news. And I think that is a good thing to do as well, I think, because it is easy to be sort of consumed by this. And we will do that, and we're going to keep going for as long as we can. I think episode 2 has been recorded tomorrow, and how long the series goes for, I really don't know at this point. But we have the people, we have the knowledge, and I think we can tell those stories and get it out there to everybody.
And my final question for the host of a 15-year-old podcast was obviously, what advice would he give to publishers who are just starting out?
If you're just starting out, I think you need to have a good plan of what what is this? Who's the audience for this? There's so many shows out there that it's easy to say, I'm going to do a daily show about X. And I think if that already exists, then maybe, you know, think about how, what's your angle in and what's your audience going to be for it? I think that's something that you really need to get a good, strong sense of. Do some good research about what's out there and where you can step in and where you can tell interesting stories that people want to hear.
Great advice from the Nature podcast that's won over an expert audience with a mix of science, news and human interest. But even after 15 years, it can adapt quickly to serve a rapidly changing scientific agenda. My big lessons from talking to Benjamin: whatever market you're in, put storytelling at the heart of your podcast, even as you adapt to changes in your audience and your subject matter. Don't be afraid of the technical language that defines your field, but find a balance between expertise and accessibility. Journalists can support commercial objectives, but they can better serve growth by making really interesting podcasts. Most interviewees can figure out how to record themselves on a smartphone. Just get your instructions down pat. Your sound doesn't need to be perfect, but there are so many podcasts out there. If your audio is unpleasant to listen to, people will go elsewhere. And if you find one story dominating your podcast regularly, consider a dedicated spin-off. A massive thank you to Benjamin Thompson for talking to me from under his duvet. In the next episode of this lesson series, I'll be learning from Casimir Stone at the Readsy podcast, winners of our brand publisher podcast category in 2020. And remember, entries for the 2021 Publisher Podcast Awards are open now. For more information on this year's expanded category lineup, take a look at publisherpodcastawards.com.